Good afternoon. This is the Design Commission. I'd like to begin by introducing first the Bureau of Development Services staff who are here. That's Kara Fiervanti. Hello, Kara. Members of the commission here today are myself, Gwen Milius, the chair, David Wark, the vice chair, David Keltner, Jane Hansen, and Tad Sabinar. Commission members are private citizens appointed by the mayor to provide review of new construction or remodeling of projects within designated design zones. We are not paid but serve entirely as volunteers. More detailed information regarding the purpose and function of the commission can be found in the Portland Zoning Code. Commission members must declare a conflict of interest, bias, or ex parte contact prior to the staff presentation of a particular case. If a commission member has a conflict of interest or bias, they are not allowed to participate in commission discussion or voting on that project. If a commission member has had an ex parte contact, they must declare the substance of it on the record, and it is subject to rebuttal. Type 3. For Type 3 reviews, the following procedure is required. 1. Public testimony can only address the applicable approval criteria or other criteria in the comprehensive plan or land use regulations which the person believes apply to the decision. The applicable approval criteria are set forth in the Portland Zoning Code and are more specifically identified in the staff report. The staff will identify the applicable criteria as part of the staff report. 2. Prior to the close of this hearing, any participant may request an opportunity to present additional evidence or testimony. If such a request is made, the commission will either grant a continuance or hold the record open to provide an opportunity to submit additional evidence and an opportunity to respond to that new evidence. 3. Failure to raise an issue accompanied by statements or evidence sufficient to afford the commission and the parties an opportunity to respond to the issue precludes appeal to the Land Use Board of Appeals based on that issue. 4. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to give the commission an opportunity to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in circuit court under Oregon Revised Statute 197.796. The commission's decision on this case is final unless appealed to City Council within 14 days of the decision. If the decision is not appealed, it must be recorded with a Multnomah County recorder. Specific instructions will not be provided with the notice of the commission's, specific instructions will be provided with the notice of the commission's action. This hearing is recorded and all speakers need to sit at the front table and give their name and mailing address before speaking. The following procedures will be used for each case. 1. Staff will show slides of the site and surrounding area and present a report which will include the applicant's proposal, identify the applicable approval criteria, and include information on letters received on the request, findings, and a recommendation on the request. 2. Applicants will present the report, and there's a 20-minute time limit on that. 3. Public testimony will be received in favor of the proposal, 3-minute time limit on that. 4. Public testimony will be received in opposition to the proposal, 3-minute time limit. 5. The applicant will then be given an opportunity to rebut the testimony of the opponents. 6. Public testimony will be closed. 7. If any party requests an opportunity to submit additional evidence, the record will be open 7 days to allow time to submit additional evidence. The record will be held open an additional 7 days to allow parties to submit evidence responding to the new evidence. After the record is closed to all of the parties, the applicant will have an additional 7 days to submit final written arguments without additional evidence. After the record is closed to all parties, commission members will discuss and vote on their request. In the case of a tie vote on any motion, that motion will fail. If the commission's decision amends or overturns the Bureau of Development Services staff report, the adoption of new or revised findings will be required. At the time of its decision, the commission will announce when the revised findings will be considered. No additional testimony will be taken, but interested parties may attend. And again, our first item on our agenda today is actually a briefing. It's the Central City 2035 plan. Kara, Carl, and Mark are here.
Okay. I don't have much to say. I know Carl and Mark are going to introduce the West Quadrant, where this lies within the larger Central City 2035 plan. This is part two, the northeast quadrant, wrapped up. Late last year?
End of 2012.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Wow. So now we're on to the West Quadrant. You have the draft document that we'll hear the highlights today. We'll hear about process, next steps. But most importantly, what we want is your input on these policies and objectives and the future of the West Quadrant. Today is kind of the introduction and the briefing, so not only do we want your input, but ideas on how to talk more with BPS on the West Quadrant, if necessary, will be important to hear from you as well. So we're getting a late start today, so I'll just let you guys.
Great. Thanks. So Carl Lyle, senior planner with BPS, and I have Mark Raggett with me from our urban design studio. So quick briefing on what we're kind of coming to the end of another major milestone in the multi-year process to update the 1988 Central City Plan. That's the area we're talking about. So both sides of the river in the central part of Portland, Central City. So everything in the Central City Plan District. informed by Portland Plan for sure, definitely part of the comprehensive plan by extension. The way we're doing it is multi-phased. So in 2012, we finished the concept plan. Some of you were involved in that, looking at big picture, no details really, but big picture policies, what's important about the central city for the next 25 years, and the first of three quadrant plans. There were going to be four at one point. Now there are three. So we are proceeding. We're making good progress. We're coming to the end of a pretty extensive process here. You can see our little arrow on the bottom left on the West Quadrant Plan project, which we started at the beginning of last year. We've been working with a 33-member stakeholder advisory committee, a pretty diverse group, on all kinds of different issues. And the area, the geography that we're talking about is the whole west side of the Central City Plan District. So from the north part of the Pearl all the way down to South Waterfront and out to Goose Hollow and everything else in there as well. These sub-geographies are a little bit different. There are slight changes here to kind of the old sub-districts in the old plan, but we think they make some sense. So that's the way we've been organizing the conversation. So we are near the end. The Stakeholder Advisory Committee has one meeting left. It's in July. They're going to be sort of forwarding their kind of final plan onto the Planning and Sustainability Commission. One thing to note is that because there are these multi phases and there's all these different products, interim products, as we work towards a new Central City Plan, Central City 2035, the quadrant plans are being adopted by resolution by council. So we're going ahead and going through the Planning and Sustainability Commission. We're going to City Council with a sort of an interim kind of blessing of those plans. So they don't have an implementing ordinance with them. There is no zoning code changes, even though there's a whole bunch of stuff suggested in the quadrant plans. It's not actually implemented as we take each quadrant plan through the adoption process. We have to then spend the next year, which we hope to start on really the work program this fall and work on it for about a year, of implementing all those ideas in all those different quadrant plans and writing a new, basically a major update to the Central City Plan District of the zoning code. So that won't actually be finished until the end of next year when we put all the pieces together, we finally have an ordinance, we have a new code, and we can get the whole thing through a big hearings adoption process with an ordinance. So that's an important caveat to when I say we're going to council this fall. So we have just kind of a smattering here of sort of urban design significances, and I think I brought Mark here to talk about those briefly, and then we can talk, sort of see if there's other ideas. So things that are included in the plan that maybe have some relevance or interest to this group in particular.
Yeah.
This is where you were supposed to start.
This is where I'm supposed to start. We're going to go back and forth. Sorry about that. And I'm Mark Raggett again, and I've been here before. I do have a tendency to talk fast. You guys know that. I know we started late, so I'm probably going to be under the gun here and want to talk even faster. So feel free to slow me down if I get going too fast. On the left, like Carl said, or he may have said, I don't know if he said already, we had a big week-long charrette about a year ago for the whole West Quadrant, and we looked at kind of the whole kit and caboodle here, Pearl District, Fremont Bridge, all the way down to South Waterfront. Had a couple of big physical urban design ideas that came out of that. One was kind of, again, focusing on the river. The first Central City Plan was really good at focusing a lot of development around the crossroads of the office core and the retail core around the light rail system, which is all about 5 or 6 blocks in from the river. We managed to get a hold of the waterfront park, but we kind of really haven't made that 21st century waterfront a real neat place, inviting to all Portlanders more of the year, more of the time. And so what you see here represented by all these kind of half moon shapes is basically a whole bunch of redevelopment potential along the waterfront, and the idea, the aspiration for a whole bunch of new riverfront communities. They don't have to be the same. They probably will not be the same. That's not a good idea, but we have a lot of development potential, a long way to go with getting a lot more of the city on the west side down to the river. So that was sort of, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that quickly in the future, but that was big idea kind of number one. Big idea number two is kind of represented kind of by this wiggly green line here, which is this idea around a green loop, which is kind of sort of think about the waterfront trail loop and kind of move that inland about 10 blocks to kind of maybe the park blocks and think about sort of a linear open space that would connect the whole central city together and how it might move through, create some new parks, some new plazas, maybe some very safe and physically separated pedestrian and bike paths, that kind of stuff. Building on the park blocks, we've had a lot of aspirations for this kind of idea for a long time, but now may be the time to actually maybe try and implement this idea. Again, so it's got a big north-south component. It's also got a bunch of east-west kind of rungs in the ladder. It'd be only as good as access to it. So there are a couple of two big urban design ideas that we had coming out of the charrette. We synthesized, I don't know how many maps we had, 30 maps. There's tons and tons of pieces of tracing paper. Synthesized them into these kind of 8 urban designs. So this is pretty high in the sky here, urban design principles. One around kind of strengthening places, again, lots of little jelly beans. A bunch of these exist today. We have, again, a long way to go in the Central City and the West Side, so how can we kind of create some more distinct places in the Central City? I talked about Embrace the River. We got like one attraction down there, Saturday Market, kind of, you know, a few, maybe just a couple attractions down there today. How can we create some more, get more people down to the river and kind of clarify ways to get down there? Talked about the Green Loop. We have a lot of street space in the Central City. How can we take better advantage of it? Create some different pathways for everyone. Think about nature. So again, we're kind of right at a pretty neat confluence of sort of some signature natural resources. How can we think about that urbanistically as well as sort of on a project-by-project basis and kind of make nature and ecological design a part of every project looking ahead? I won't go into these. These are kind of sort of self-explanatory. Land use, sort of, we have a lot of housing in this West Quadrant today. We definitely have growing and shifting populations, most notably in the Pearl District, a lot more families with small children. The housing needs there are a little different. The architecture needs are a little different, and sort of the public spaces are a little different. How can we think about new housing opportunities in different parts of the West Quadrant? And think more intergenerationally, so it's not just families or children, but people, sort of senior citizens, et cetera. So some of the populations around here, what are their needs? How can we think about creating more complete communities around those populations? Growing employment, we got a pretty successful office core. How to strengthen that, make that better, but think about also new jobs, maybe around institutions, PSU, PNCA, OHSU to the south, this little yellow guy down here, and then maybe some opportunities like what's offered on the east side, maybe in Old Town Chinatown, around incubator businesses, startups, that kind of stuff. Strengthening sort of the employment center that we have right now. Expanding the retail core, this is kind of a, you know, again, the retail core right now is tight, kind of right in there, doesn't quite get to the river, but we've had a lot of retail energy around the brewery blocks and even further north into the Pearl District. How can we kind of extend that core maybe north, and how can we get it down to the river finally? Maybe the Morrison Bridgehead, and maybe with the public market project right down there. So kind of get that energy that right now isn't on the waterfront down to the river. And finally, thinking about the skyline a little bit more strategically and kind of getting some more of the downtown urban sort of structure and feel and form closer to the waterfront and really trying to embrace that big wide Willamette River in a few places, not everywhere. So not kind of build a big wall along the Willamette River, but how can we think about maybe most notably some bridgehead locations and get down between the historic districts and kind of really create some vibrant places down there and get more people closer to the water. Those translated into six kind of land use concept maps. These are bubble kind of maps. So we're getting a little closer to the ground here. And four transportation concepts. So real quick, we have a land use one, which is people have sort of cited as the orange map. Earlier version of this map had more color on it, frankly. We're trying to be a little more intentional about different land uses in different parts of the West Quadrant. As we had more and more meetings with our stakeholder advisory committee, there was a I would say, growing discomfort with trying to be intentional and instead wanted a lot more flexibility for uses throughout the West Quadrant, which is why you see kind of largely one color there, which is kind of a mixed use. I would say that there are different kinds of hatches here, which is where we're emphasizing different maybe emphasis in land use. So some are office around the office core here, some are more residential, and maybe a little bit around institutional uses as well. The blue here is lower part of the West End and Goose Hollow, where definitely there's some interest in maintaining that residential character. Special places, I tried to put all these things on one map, got too busy. So we got some special places over there, not too surprising. Historic districts, big attractions, places like PSU, places like Skidmore, Old Town, Chinatown, and then signature attractions like, again, Tomahawk Waterfront Park, Saturday Market, et cetera. Where are some existing ones and where can new ones be in the future? Height map, we'll get into more detail on this in a later bit. We're proposing some changes, not a lot, but we are proposing some changes where increased flexibility in building heights in a few key locations. So most notably strengthening the extending the transit mall heights sort of south down here and looking at some bridgeheads specifically around the Morrison Bridgehead, most notably there. Again, a little more detail. Gwen?
What's the white hole in the gray box?
Those are right here.
No,
this is the Northwest 13th Historic District. Okay. So again, lowering heights potentially in there in the historic district boundary itself. Mm-hmm. So tied to that boundary. I'll get in a little more detail on that in a sec. Three more maps, street development character. Talk to you a little bit more about this one. So again, being a little more intentional with our street system, we have a lot of streets in the Central City. I think I mentioned, you've heard this before, about 40% of our land area in the Central City is in streets. That's a lot. City of San Francisco, for comparison, is about 25%. So how can we be maybe a little more intentional with this big resource we have in public space and maybe make some of them different than others, offer some different opportunities? Parks and open space. You see that green loop kind of reflected here in some dashed green lines. So some proposals for it. There are some existing open spaces here, some proposals for new ones, maybe some opportunities to create some perhaps different types of public spaces, might be privately owned, but publicly accessible. So there's some like some of the plazas we have in the downtown area there and where the key connections. This last map is kind of a placeholder, and I think there was a lot of struggle with our stakeholder advisory committee around this topic. This is around, again, being a lot more specific and thinking proactively about green systems, things like district energy sources, and sort of how to connect different places and different redevelopment sites to each other, sort of from a heating and cooling standpoint. Thinking about stormwater management in large parts of sort of the southern end of downtown, where we may have issues with existing separated systems that are directly discharging water into the Willamette River. We may want to think about more Green Street ideas down in there. So I'm thinking also about where we can, sites that, not a lot of topography here, but definitely in Goose Hollow, there may be some opportunities to capture rainfall off the West Hills and bring it down and reuse it potentially around Providence Park, potentially around Lincoln High School redevelopment. This was a placeholder, so I don't think this is the final map here, and there's a lot more conversations to come on this one. So those are the four land use maps. There were also four unique kind of for our Bureau of Transportation, excuse me. This is kind of a new step for them in thinking about the modal classifications conceptually and West Quadrant wide, pedestrian, bicycle, transit, and motor vehicular freight. I apologize, it's a little small. But this is for them kind of trying to pick the primary networks for each one of those modes and sort of, again, existing and proposed, recognizing that there are some access issues and we got a lot long ways to go here, but what are the key network systems for each one of these modes? This is the pedestrian sort of system here, so you can see a lot of lines on this one. Obviously, the whole West Quadrant is basically a pedestrian district, but where are the key types of routes? Where are the places, these rose-colored areas are places where maybe we could think about limiting other modal access? So maybe could we create pedestrian-only types of spaces like around the cultural district? For example, around this district that we're in right here, are there other opportunities for those, for pedestrian-only spaces in the West Quadrant? The bike system, this one has a lot of sort of new ideas in it and sort of a long way to go, but again, you see the green loop potentially coming through here north-south along the park blocks potentially, some key east-west corridors, but where are the connections, again, that bicyclists are trying to go to? I think we're entering a stage where it's not just the bicycle commuters, but also the Sunday riders, and how do we kind of create more of a network that's more comfortable to that group, that user group, more of the time in the West Quadrant? A lot of big attractions and destinations to go to in the West Quadrant, Art Museum, and Downtown Retail Core, and Waterfront Park, and Portland State University Farmers Market, et cetera. How can we get more people to those sites more of the time and have it be a really enjoyable, safe experience? Transit, the big thing I'll just highlight here is this mustard-colored blob along the waterfront. Like you heard, a big idea is getting down to the waterfront. One of the big things that worked back here in the red, the transit mall, was sort of a really aggressive sort of transit approach to 5th and 6th Avenues in the Portland Transit Mall. Is transit a part of sort of our waterfront? Right now it's underserved from sort of a north-south standpoint, and should we think about maybe increasing, improving transit access along the waterfront there somewhere as a part of a big redevelopment strategy along our waterfront? So that's what you see there. And then again, the big purple nudibranch down here between 26 and 26, recognizing we have a long-term sort of bigger project coming with our partners at the Oregon State Department of Transportation in improving kind of what's right out the windows here, the southern piece of 405, and especially the east end of the Ross Island Bridge, 26 here, and heading west into the tunnel on 26 over here. We have a lot of issues, longstanding concern. How are we going to do that? And probably as a part of that project would be a lot of improvements to the local transportation system there.
Oh, this is me.
This is you.
So all that stuff kind of was developing the concept, right, but not into the actual goals and policies, the meat of what these plans are, kind of what the actions and things that we're going to do. But now we are at that. And so some of you requested paper copies. Others got a link, I think. But you can see the draft now that we're working with. And what we basically have are seven different district chapters with goals, sort of a goal for each, policies, and then a series of different actions. So this is an example. These are the seven, right, in the gray boxes here. And this is an example of looking at downtown. You know, these are the things that's in there. That's kind of the table of contents for how these things work. And we've been working with these drafts. The first staff drafts came out in January, so we've been working through big public process for about 6 months on those. So what do they have in them? They've got a series of nice maps that Mark made that are very beautiful, that have sort of key things. They've been called art by some people involved in the process.
Not
me either. Sort of key existing features, you know, historic districts, again, major buildings, things to keep note of that sort of help drive the context for sure of what we're talking about. And then sort of major character areas, so the transit mall, right, sort of office core transit mall, and this is just the case of downtown, and then bisected. These are the tenets of the 1972 downtown plan, if they look familiar. And really, this is an update, particularly in the downtown area where, you know, we have a lot lot of planning history, and it's old, but it's perfectly valid and really working in a lot of ways. So in many ways, we're just translating existing policies and ideas into this updated kind of format. And in some places, there's bigger moves. But the other places are recognizing the waterfront as sort of a different area that maybe needs some different attention and different ideas. And then something about the Park Avenue, Park Blocks kind of spine there. It's a different place. This one, I think Mark's going to talk about a little bit more, but this is our attempt at trying to be a little bit more hierarchical or intentional about different streets and the types of relationships that development has along different streets to that street, to the sidewalk, to the public realm. So red streets as key kind of retail, very pedestrian, very vibrant, kind of Main Street type environments. So Broadway, right? Yamhill, Morrison, Broadway, Burnside, those big key streets. Blue streets as streets that we don't want to make them bad streets. We want them to be great streets, but maybe we recognize that retail isn't necessarily the answer. So this is kind of leading us down a path of eventually looking at what is that ground floor active standard? What does that mean? What kind of options are we providing there? Do we really want to push people towards retail all the time, or do we just want to do that in certain streets and in certain places and be a little bit broader in others? So that's a pretty interesting concept there, and that's just the map for downtown. Each one of the seven districts has this series of three maps. Okay, highlights, I'm not going to go through these, don't worry, but the kinds of things that you'll find in policies and action statements in the plan, right? So things like maintaining the office core, encouraging new housing in a certain area, in this case along NATO Parkway, protecting the historic character of a certain district, those kinds of things. And then in the action table, so our plans, they take this this format of these kind of action items, and they have a code, and these are different policy areas, regional center, is housing and neighborhoods, is transportation, right? And so these are examples from the downtown draft of some action items, the kinds of things you'll find. There are hundreds of them now in the draft, so that there are many of these, and they have different timelines. Some of them will get done over the next year as we work on the code update, things like looking at incentives to increase residential development along Southwest NATO. So that's like taking a look at our bonus programs and other kinds of incentives that maybe are in the zoning code or through some other kind of tools, and they're assigned to various different bureaus over here, so BPS and Housing Bureau on that one. So those are the kinds of things that you'll see there, and that's kind of how that works. And then there actually are in the drafts now, a series of, they're provisional, they really are provisional at this point because we need to take a look at the entire central city once we finish all the quadrant plans and make sure that our performance targets are sort of adding up to something that meets the aspiration of the concept plan and actually have some basis in reality and look a little bit like our growth projections and sort of feelings about what might be attainable. So typical things, job growth, housing units, affordable housing units perhaps, mode split on transportation, on urban design, we've got some targets about measuring active street frontage, where do you have doors and windows and things, where do you have blank walls, parking lots, various things like that, to measure progress. And some, just that note at the bottom, is that some of those targets are probably just going to be central city-wide rather than trying to measure for the West End or for Old Town Chinatown. We'll probably be looking at the entire central city on some of that stuff. So I'm going to encourage Mark to be pretty quick with these, but during the course of our conversations, there's a few things that have had a lot of conversation about them that we wanted to give you just a little bit more richness in the kind of a sense of the conversation. And so that's what these things are. Mark?
Okay.
Yeah.
Not too fast, right, girl? Just okay, pretty fast. Okay. So we'll just list design guideline updates. So these are kind of just some things to highlight, pull out for you. Like Carl said, design guideline updates, some development standards, street hierarchy implementation, historic resource issues, building heights. Let's really get that waterfront again, more specifically. Quickly on the development standard and design guideline updates. Again, Carl already mentioned the schedule, but what's coming is a more specific sort of, again, maybe starts fall this year, continues. More specifically, look at the zoning code. So we're getting a lot of good direction right now at the quadrant-wide level. So how to change zoning code, how to change zoning, how to do, you know, think about all these things differently. The more specific sort of code language comes later this calendar year and sort of into next year. What follows that, again, for this commission is a lot of interest in updating the design guidelines that affect the whole central city. So the fundamentals, starting with fundamentals, but also district design guidelines and subsequent to that, historic district and greenway design guidelines. There may be an opportunity to look at all those and talk about that whole system and structure together, hopefully. But that would follow this kind of next year's work on 33.5.10 in the zoning code. And down the lower left are kind of some things we've heard so far, and this is just a few. This is not an exhaustive list, but a few of the newer sort of topics we've heard, most notably around bird-friendly design and a related issue kind of around building facade reflectivity, sort of, you know, shiny, reflective building facades. that I think work well for the buildings and sort of you know, reducing sort of heat that's kind of entering the building is actually forcing it out off of the building and into adjacent buildings, older buildings. And so that may be something we want to think about. And those two top two bullets may be related. There's also a lot of ongoing sort of, and maybe some new lessons learned around pedestrian orientation and livability that we want to think about with new design guidelines and an update to the fundamentals, not to mention others. That street hierarchy, we've talked a little bit about this, and I think some of you guys have seen these slides before, but again, being more intentional and thinking more cohesively about both that streetscape, that public realm environment, and the adjacent ground floors of buildings, the architecture of the adjacent floor. It's not just one or the other, it's actually both. Three types, the red ones are the retail commercial, the blue ones are the boulevard, and the green ones are this flexible kind of real opportunity for a neat new network. Those would work sort of hand in hand with sort of our PBOT, our Bureau of Transportation modal concepts. And again, they would result in sort of, again, zoning code development standards, regulations, and map changes. So kind of how do these concepts kind of come together, and what does that mean for the zoning code? What does it mean for design guidelines? So where do we want more subjective sort of guidance and more discretionary types of conversations? And finally, what does it mean for street standards sort of, and the PBOT, the streetscape design end of things? What does it mean for street design standards and potentially eventually TSP classifications around the modes? This is just a couple slides clipped out for sort of historic resource issues. And again, this is, you can see that at the top, this is for a West End district. But a lot of things, again, we've heard a lot about sort of the value. And of course, you guys are well aware of sort of the architectural texture and variety that the older buildings bring to our downtown districts, again, especially also, in my opinion, when mixed with newer buildings. So there's a lot of contrast going on. It's very vibrant, very varied sort of skyline and sort of urban public spaces that are created. These are some of the actions you see. These are all urban in the urban design section, but around historic preservation, renovation, rehabilitation of historic buildings. So, and again, I would say this is for the West End. We've heard a lot about this in Old Town Chinatown, and frankly, we've heard a lot about it in other parts of the central city as well. But these are just to give you a sense of sort of what some of those issues are. So again, trying to update the inventory of historic buildings, definitely thinking about transfer tools to encourage transfers off of historic structures and onto other sites, other good receiving sites, and thinking about more flexibility in zones, in existing zones, to encourage the adaptive reuse of existing buildings. There's also some probably language to come on thinking more strategically and probably more objectively, so maybe in the code around setbacks and building setbacks to create podiums that might carry sort of certain cornice lines along in to kind of match or better complement existing historic buildings while still allowing a taller tower piece on the block or on the site, but sort of maybe trying to encourage more of a podium or sort of trying to match and complement existing lower buildings in different parts of the West Quadrant. A lot of building height conversations. I apologize. This is the big complicated maps. This is an existing map on the left, and this is kind of our proposed sort of half step to a new one of these on the left, on the right here. So again, some big change areas, or I would say the change areas. We don't have a lot of them, but we are proposing to increase heights in the Northern Pearl District up here. We are proposing, like you guys zoomed in on, in the historic district here, to lower heights in the historic district. Or I should say not lower heights, but we're kind of removing the bonus option in that historic district right in there, Northwest 13th. This is kind of a complicated little thing that's going on in here. We're proposing to increase heights in some areas and reduce heights in others. The existing, if you guys will recall from the central city plan, called for kind of a red crescent. So basically that big pink, that U.S. Bancorp Tower kind of development potential extends north of Burnside and roughly heads all the way to the Steel Bridge and into the Lloyd District, basically. So a lot of that, as you guys are well aware, has not been met, and frankly, hardly any of it has. There are a lot of old buildings. There's a lot of neat old town fabric in here. We think probably makes some sense to, yes, maintain some opportunity at the bridgehead, the steel bridgehead here, but probably think about reducing the allowable heights in that area just north of Burnside and sort of try and cultivate more of a mixed character in there. We're also increasing the heights down here at the Southern Transit Mall, like I talked about earlier, and definitely thinking about in between the historic districts on the waterfront, thinking about increasing opportunities at the Hawthorne and Morrison bridgeheads, most notably. We looked at a few of those areas. This is just to give you a sample of sort of some of the graphics we prepared to work with our stakeholder advisory committee. This is the south end of downtown. Here's I-405. We're looking kind of northeast. This is sort of looking at some redevelopment sites and sort of what that might mean. So again, this is the transit mall. The new light rail station comes down here. Here's the news, the sort of southernmost light rail stations here. And then we'll continue down Lincoln on its way over here to the new bridge. So the University Place hotel site, potential redevelopment scheme there. And then again, thinking about what would some increased heights look like and what would the potential be in the South Transit Mall. And look, this is the kind of slide that Carl gives me here. I'm going to walk through each one of these in a lot of detail. right now. I'm just kidding. This is just to give you a sense, and I think this was also not walked through with anybody. This was just to give everyone a sense of the amount of interest there is in sort of that revitalizing, getting down, and sort of making that river a lot more active and vibrant place to be. So lots and lots and lots of actions and lots of different categories. So again, around transportation improvements along Edo Parkway, getting more development on the bridgeheads, thinking about access and getting across and to and making it more visible, clear from deeper parts of the city, all that kind of stuff. Updating greenway plans, everything is kind of here. So you see a lot of interest in a lot of different categories of really making our waterfront a lot better place to be. More of the time, this is just, again, giving you a little model example of these are existing heights at the Morrison Bridgehead. A little bit of a flooding issue. Hopefully everyone's got their sandbags, so we didn't kind of lower that water down enough there. But this is Morrison Bridgehead here. Morrison Bridge, we're looking kind of north, looking to the west. This is the existing height limits right here. Skidmore Old Town's going over here. And sort of what we worked through with our SAC is maybe the potential to go taller, still step down, but go a little bit taller right there on the waterfront, maybe with some setbacks along the NATO Parkway frontage right there. Give you another example of that. Another new thing, and I wanted to credit our Portland Parks Bureau, another one of the issues that we're definitely working with is a lot of use of and conflicts, frankly, from pedestrians and bicyclists in the park itself. A lot of issues Parks and Peabody are working with, trying to figure out how to separate those modes a little bit and sort of, you know, get people to behave a little bit better given the high volume of use that waterfront park gets right now, especially from pedestrian and bike perspective. This is just kind of more out of whimsy, but this is kind of an idea they had to get people's attention. I'm not sure this is the way it's going to work, and I'm not sure if it's possible to walk a small unicorn in that way. So ride slow and crowded is definitely sort of the theme.
Ride slow.
That's all I had.
So, oh my gosh, I'm not going to touch that. Sorry. Is it still going?
There we go. Good run.
Right.
Have that removed.
So and on all of those issues that Mark just went through really quickly, there's been a lot of conversation, particularly, as you know, on the building heights kind of stuff. There have been very engaged groups from some neighborhoods, West End in particular, but others as well, who have a lot of very strong feelings about building heights and a lot of valid concerns about, you know, what lots of new tall buildings would do in their neighborhood. So we've had huge amount of conversation on that. Their needs, the needs of all of those groups, I would say, are not fully met and reflected to their satisfaction in the draft that is going forward, that is really being blessed by the majority of our stakeholder advisory committee. So that continues to be an issue of some controversy, just so you know, and I'm sure you're not surprised. So where are we going from here? We have one SAC, that's our Stakeholder Advisory Committee meeting left in July, and we're going into briefings and hearings with the Planning and Sustainability Commission in August and September. We hope to get to City Council with a resolution. So again, not implementing this stuff, but with a resolution saying, yeah, this looks good, go work on the code now and bring it all back. So that'll be happening over the fall and through next year. And then by the end of really next year, we hope to actually have and enter what will probably be a fairly long hearings and adoption process with a fully revised plan district code section. And then the last bullet Mark added because of its relevance here, which is, you know, the design guideline stuff, and there's a lot of it in here, will really probably have to wait for the most part until after that code update. But it would be sort of the next thing on our list, I would think. So that's what we had.
Questions or comments for our presenters before we move on?
Yeah, question. Do you have a question?
I got nine.
Nine, okay.
Wow.
I have nine
questions?
Nine quick comments that I'll roll through really quickly. One, I want to compliment the team. The graphics are outstanding. This department always has fantastic graphics, but this one is really, this is a beautiful thing. So keep that up, the clarity, the reservation of not to overdo things, the readability, everything is really, really outstanding throughout the document, very easy to read. On page 41, you have Davis as a flexible street in Old Town, and I just want to remind you that this street connects all the galleries in that the DeSoto building, the park blocks, Girding Theater. There's a grade shift, so if you walk out of the Girding Theater and look down into Old Town, you can see the street. There was an art installation along that street. There's opportunities for First Thursday street closure by the DeSoto building. There's a host of connections or potential for connections that maybe could be enhanced a little bit more than just calling it flexible. Mm-hmm. I think there's a real lighting and evening use that could be a pleasant place to walk after an evening of theater down into Old Town or vice versa. So take a look at that. Page 55, enhance the concentration of arts. I found that the recommendations really didn't do this. I mean, they talked about the connectivity between the cultural facilities, but and mentioned a PBOT responsibility to do some new improvements, but I think you need something if you want to make those connections, unless you know of a program that those institutions are going to implement. Look for something with a little more meat on it to make that happen, because I think it's a good idea. Page 69, that's the PBOT recommendation. Page 83, you say renovate the Vista Bridge in 6 to 20 years. It just had the cyclone fencing put on. That's supposed to go away in three. Seems like these two things should be linked. We want to make sure that cyclone fencing goes away in 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I think the design around the safety issues on that bridge should have much more extensive vetting than the cyclone fence did. And so maybe there's a way to tie the renovations with the safety thing. Page 84, you talk about providing more pedestrian access to Collins Circle and Fireman's Park. I was on the design team of Collins Circle, and it was a TriMet project, and the goal was to make sure that no one went out there. It is a safety issue, and it's a traffic circle, and there is no reason to invite anybody into it, and I think Marassi made that, it looks like scorched earth, and that was the intent. So I don't know where that's coming from.
But nice scorched earth.
What?
But it's a nice scorched earth.
Yeah, right. Pleasant. So I don't know where that's coming from, but I think you should talk to TriMet and others, and I think it's not correct. Number seven. Did you guys look at the Southwest or South Waterfront Public Art Master Plan by
Buster?
Buster.
I haven't looked at it recently, but yes, I've seen it.
Well, Buster's great. It was a good plan then. But there's some language. You've got a lot of language in here for South Waterfront about maritime history and, you know, all kinds of ecological talking text things and, you know, whatever. This is a neighborhood that is seeking an identity. There's going to be a million people down there in all those offices and what's to come. You're calling it the innovation quadrant. Public art is the best way to make place per your dollar of scale in that place. You guys should be thinking Chicago Bean. Now, that was $22 million. I'm not expecting you to spend $22 million on one sculpture. However, the nature of claiming a place and making a new idea. Let's not go back anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got history books, we got talking tours, we got train guys, we got all that. This is a new neighborhood. It's in a place that had a prior use, so everything has a prior use. I'm not against, you know, self-guided tours and all that stuff. But this is a place where public art with setbacks, plazas, pocket parks, views of the river, underpasses, where public art could claim a place in the city that would make it a dynamic environment. It's really easy for me to say OHSU should step up and do 5% for public art or something like that without, you know, talking to them. However, I will tell you that OHSU has an extremely active public art committee that provides art throughout all their facilities, you know, of a 2D nature. And that group is made up of the leading collectors and curators in the city, and they would get all over this, and they, I think, would raise money for it. So I think a vision of South Waterfront as having identity that you could kind of pump up and electrify, collaborate with OMSI, collaborate with Intel, whatever it is, this is the innovation quadrant. So make it that, okay? Second to last comment. Page 113, you talk about the Burnside couplet. We all know about that. And this is my own personal little thing. I think the key to fixing Burnside is to connect Northwest and Southwest. It's about walking that gap of Burnside. How do you invite all the people in downtown to walk into Old Town? And so don't forget that there's the cross links that run north-south across Burnside rather than just fixing Burnside, because people are still not going to walk on Burnside. It's still eight lanes of traffic. So maybe it's more important to get people to cross it than it is. So last comment. You mentioned that Goose Hollow had said, we want the neighborhood to stay residential.
And south of Columbia.
The southern part of it.
Okay. And then you made a comment that you felt that the report does not specifically reflect all the wishes, demands, and aspirations of the neighborhoods that you met with.
Particularly around building height, particularly around requests that we dramatically reduce building heights that have been high for a
long time. I would remind you guys know this, but we'll put it on record, is that, what an amazing district Goose Hollow is. It's close to Lincoln High School Athletic Club, fantastic access. It's adjacent to the West End. You could live and walk downtown every day, rain or shine, if you work downtown. Connectivity to the park blocks and connectivity to the cultural spine connection. I think there's a huge opportunity for height and density in many of the blocks in Goose Hollow that are currently underbuilt. So regardless whether it's south of Columbia or whatever, I'm just saying there's a lot of property there that I think has potential, and it's in a good place. So I just hope that I might disagree with the Goose Hollow residents, but I'm not living there.
Oh, there's been lots of disagreement. Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry.
Plenty of that.
Thank you for your patience.
Thanks. Commissioner Work, did you have?
Yeah, I had. You mentioned the concept of pedestrian zones. Can you? Like pedestrian-only zones? Is that, what's your thinking on that?
I think in some places it may be, some, like the cultural district came up frequently, so around the Oregon Art Museum and Portland Center for Performing Arts, Oregon Historical Society in there. There's interest, at least temporarily, if not permanently in some cases, maybe creating a pedestrian-only zone. Okay. So I don't think it's necessarily, pedestrian-only all the time, but maybe reclaiming more of that public space for space.
And then investigation to the active ground floor, whether it be retail or other, what we've seen is a lot of kind of mixed reactions to the requirement of commercial space, whether it be retail or office. So I wonder if there's a, when you do identify those retail corridors, that's what they are, and there's a requirement for that, and that housing isn't a substitute for that anymore. And so that's something that we've seen quite a bit of, as being whether it's in the central city or in the outlying neighborhoods of a lot of development right now is going into small neighborhoods and having housing on the first floor when it could potentially be retail and really build upon what's already there. So I guess the question would be, even though it's not retail, what would be the design guidelines for a first floor housing? Would it be stoops? Would it be same floor to floor height with the potential for mezzanines? So you could do live work. So there's a flexible kind of function there, but it addresses the street in a much more open way than a couple of punched windows in a wall. So I think there's something to kind of maybe think about. Yep. Okay, that's all.
Any other comments?
I just had one. It's kind of a comment and a question. When you're doing these schemes around moving height around the city and deciding where you're going to put it, Is there a projection that you're using for population growth or something to plan how much density you have to add, or can you talk about that just quickly?
Definitely. We're using regional projection numbers for 2035, and we're looking at a lot of growth in the central city. Trying to remember off the top of my head, it'll be in the plan drafts, but I think roughly doubling the number of housing units in the West Quadrant.
Which is what, 20,000?
Which is 20 plus thousand now. Significant, and also a lot, which is extremely important, a lot of commercial, office, retail, other kinds of space, because of course it's downtown. So, but one thing before you go further with that is the floor area ratios, which is really what's dictating the square footage in the building, how much new space or units or whatever there are. We're really not changing those hardly at all, and really I don't think anywhere are we reducing them, at least so far in the conversation. So really it's been more about height and where we're comfortable being more flexible on the size of the envelope into which you have to pour that FAR and kind of play with it, right? So in historic districts, for example, there appears to be, for the most part, a very strong desire to maintain that scale, that height, to be consistent with the historic fabric. In other areas, there seems to be, like the north part of the Pearl District, for example, where the floor area ratios aren't all that high, but there's actually no height limit at all. It's a willingness to play with the notion of being very tall if very thin kind of a thing. Really, it isn't so much about the density. And in places where we are getting requests to lower the density and lower the height to the point where there really would be much less development potential, I think we're extremely concerned with that on a staff level, and we really haven't included those recommendations. And that's part of the rub that we were describing, because some requests have been to dramatically limit both height and development potential floor area ratio in places like the West End, which we really don't want to do.
So you're not seeing the current considerations of height changes as having an impact on the number of people that could live or work in these districts?
No.
It's more just the shape,
right,
of what you achieve on your site?
Right.
Increasing development flexibility in some places that are, like the bridgeheads, have traditionally been a pretty hard place to develop. There's a lot of big things going on down there, and can we kind of increase opportunities for more building types down there?
So in your mind, when you reduce height in a certain district, you're not obligated then to add that height back in somewhere. If you were reducing FAR somewhere, you might feel like you'd have to add that
perhaps,
back in somewhere.
Yeah. And just for context, the places where height is being, like, so there's a fairly large area in Old Town, Chinatown, where we're saying, let's bring that height down. But we're talking about bringing it down from 425 to 200. Or 250. So we're still talking about the ability to be able to accommodate very large buildings, very high density development, really. It's just not to the level of the tallest buildings in the city in that neighborhood.
So what's causing the rethinking of what was put in place?
I think, it varies in every case, and there's a rationale kind of behind each one of these little moves and tweaks, and that's really what they are. But in the case of that one, I think it's moving back from really a 70s and 80s idea that office development and the office core and the Class A towers were going to continue to be built at a rapid pace in the downtown core, because that's what we had seen in the 60s and 70s. We had lots of bank towers and headquarters and things like that being built, and we were investing in transit, and we thought we're going to put this transit through here, and that's where we should put all these big towers, and we're going to have a whole bunch of them because that's what downtown is. And I think that now we don't really believe that to be the future of our economy in the same kind of way. So I think we want to accommodate some of that, but we've got some places where you can do a few of those big buildings. We've been getting a couple a decade at best of the really big sort of traditional Class A office towers, and a lot of really terrific for the region economic activity going on in places like Old Town and the Central East Side, which is contributing in a very meaningful way to the economy that isn't in that format, that older sort of format. So I think for the historic preservation reasons and the sort of character of the district, and also because of the sort of changing nature of the economy and the kind of buildings that appear to attract the sort of creative kind of businesses and various things that have been successful in that area, kind of taking a step back. And
so the rationale behind taking 200 feet off the table in that neighborhood is really about the historic preservation angle. It's about
the context and character, and how do we describe that neighborhood 20, 25 years out? And is it a description that looks like the downtown office core, or is it something pretty different? And it's something pretty different, I think, in the conversations. It's a blend of kind of what's there now and new development and new things, but certainly not full block office towers, which is kind of what the original Red Crescent notion was about.
Okay. Is there a component, or is there thinking within your department about when you've kind of figured out the zoning and you've got the plan done, how the information is disseminated? I think we see a lot of people, the biggest cause of testimony is people that are surprised by what can be accomplished on the site right next door to them. And right now, it's sort of, you've got to be in the, there's no sort of compulsory acknowledgement of what can happen across the street from you, and it causes a lot of angst within neighborhoods, and really is probably causing a lot of the current kind of stakeholder input that you're getting to kind of push back on building heights and things like that, now that people have seen that start to happen in some places. Is there any thinking about how this sort of thing is disseminated in a more rigorous way? Citizens understand what's going on?
We spend a lot of time on trying to figure out how to use our limited resources to reach people who are going to contribute to our process in a meaningful way. It doesn't solve the problem of people having no idea about what the current regulatory framework is and why the plans are what they are. And it would be great if real estate agents had to actually show people a plan of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Is that policy that's being discussed?
It hasn't been. It's an interesting concept.
But well, it seems like this would be a venue and a time to do it.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time in here listening to public testimony, people who said,
my realtor told me.
You changed.
Right.
Right.
And I get it, but,
Right.
It's something to think about, I think, as you're working on this, how
absolutely
what kind of policy you could put in place that would inform people about what's possible.
Really good idea.
Yeah. No, I would second that. I think that's the heart. Sat down with Mark Amberg before we came down here today, and one of the things that I know that you all are working on is the quote-unquote new social contract between the public and those of us that do this kind of work about, neighborhood by neighborhood, what can they expect in exchange for higher density, and, what sort of bright new tomorrow can we all agree on is okay and that we can reach together. And I feel like right now we're at a bit of a crossroads on that social contract. I wouldn't say it's a low point, but it's been a, we're running through some difficult stuff right now. So I think as a commission, we're sort of the tip of the spear. And we see the stuff that all those gorgeous drawings that you guys do when they become real buildings. The plans become whole here, and so we have a direct interest in making sure that people really understand how all those beautiful diagrams become real buildings and real places that people have to look at for a long time. So, okay. Well, thank you for your speedy and concise presentation. And I read your document with great interest. Jane, did you have something you wanted to add? Okay.
It's just great to see the evolution of this whole process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. Thank you. Thanks so much. Okay.